Motion f or well, any abstentions? That motion fails. So we have ended debate on this resolution. Seating chair back.
I'd like to re-raise my point of order. Point of order does not need to be recognized per Robert's rules in section 23. A point of order raises a procedural issue which the chair must then make a ruling on. The procedural issue which I am now raising for the third time is the fact that a speaking precedent does not exist, and per Robert's rules, the chair must select speakers in a completely impartial view based on how many times they have spoken.
Point of personal privilege.
Must be first a ruling on my point of order.
That's true. Well, okay, I do make my calls on an unbiased scale. I do believe that, especially in this assembly, the executive board has more knowledge on a lot of things, and so. And also very rarely speaks, quite honestly. Like we don't, like, members here do not speak very often. And also when they have spoken once, I do not give them the privilege to speak again over someone who hasn't spoken. Spoken. There is still the recency aspect, which I do recognize because that is an important part of speaking order. If, gosh, I am not open to the page on in the book, and I also don't have every, like, the exact language of everything being, like, recognized. Well, doesn't have.
No, it does not. The
Doesn't have
order
page.
interrupts debate and then the chair makes a ruling on it. Have it open. The ruling you have, well.
Are you asking for the ruling to be made on whether or not she is going to continue using a speaking order?
No, that I'm bringing it up because it doesn't exist. She has to prove within the government documents in or Robert's rules the reasoning for this precedent and speaking order. And I'll tell you, there is none.
Okay, but the thing is, it's chair's discretion on who to select to
No,
speak. It is. It is. That's in this Robert's rules as
it
well.
said discretion in an impartial manner. Twice when I have raised this point of order, both Chair Durham and Chair Flournoy have explicitly said they have biased the executive board over other members of the assembly. That is a violation of parliamentary procedures and the government doc governing documents. I will not stand for
I'm
it
just going to
in this
open this
public
point of
hearing.
order up to the ruling on the point of order up to the body for a vote, because that is also a fair motion, and I don't want to rule on this myself.
Did you cite where? So we're going to use a 1,137 page document, aka Robert's Rules. We should be using it properly. It's not debatable.
Our bylaws or anything don't expect, like, say Robert's rules, so how we follow Robert's rules is also up to the chair's discretion.
Yeah, so
There's
our
12 editions of Robert's rules. Again, leaves a lot up to chair's discretion.
governing documents take precedence over Robert's rules, and we don't have anything in our governing documents about speaking order. But Robert's rules is pretty clear about the fact that if there are multiple members who have their placards raised, the chair's discretion to recognize them, as long as they are recognizing every single person who has their placard raised. I don't understand what the issue is. It's not like Zora's not refusing to recognize people. It goes through the entire cycle before they re-recognize people that have already spoken.
Two times I have raised this point of order is specifically because this assembly, in terms of parliamentary procedure, all members are equal. So these, and I specifically mentioned in both rulings, why did you pick another member to speak over another? And both times they've admitted it themselves because they are on the executive body. That is not a rule. In terms of debate privileges, all members are treated equally per Robert's rules. Now, under section 23, (2:7), I would like to move to have this ruling voted on so you can all of the members can vote on whether or not there is a speaking precedent. Because there is none.
That's what I said. I said that I would raise it to a vote of the assembly, and then I
Okay.
was trying to find the exact portion, and it says it is normally ruled upon by the chair. No vote is taken unless the chair is in doubt or his ruling is appealed. I'm in doubt, so I'll just leave it up to a vote of the assembly.
Have a clarification of the question that we're voting on? Or I could go ahead and do it.
You are the person who raised the point of order, so you are
Okay.
the one to clarify the question.
So, for the members of the assembly, so you better understand, is what you're voting on is should Zora have the discretion to authorize the precedent of giving precedence to speaking to members of the executive cabinet or committee?
Can you please repeat that?
Currently, as it stands, and why I've raised this point of order three times is because, in terms of debate, order, and privileges, the chair must remain impartial and not have any biases. And the only thing that can be taken into the chair's discretion is the number of speaking order. It is discretionary, sure, and the number of times that someone has spoken. But for the record, I believe it is a violation of the parliamentary procedure and the rules to pick someone to speak in a debate over another because they are a member of the executive cabinet. That is not how the debating privileges work. And I will tell you, history, you could go back 3 years, 4 years, and any time before, the Student Assembly would be at each other's throats if someone were chosen to speak before another just because of their role on the assembly. In terms of a debate,
Point of
per the
inquiry, we
order,
don't have an executive cabinet. We have an executive board. All right,
can we
all
vote
right.
on
We just
this?
had an
Can we
executive.
put the back and
Wait.
forth? All right. So I've
So let
written
me
down
clarify the question.
this question to be, should Zora have, well,
Wait,
it,
wait. Point of inquiry, is what he's saying factual? If what he's saying is not even factual, do we even have to entertain it?
Why would I raise a point of
I
order that's
right,
not
okay.
factual? I have Robert's rules open right here. There's no
Wait,
speaking
can we
precedent.
behave like
Okay,
adults?
wait. Wait, give me like 1 second because they're in completely different parts of this book. I want to find the exact quotes that I operate off of.
I don't understand why it's controversial for me to say that executive members are not given speaking privilege precedent in determining debates. Twice hasn't been brought up, and I explicitly asked reasoning, and they admitted it themselves because they're an executive cabinet. The chair and the cabinet, they are the ones required to
Four.
prove their actions, and there is nothing in their actions that there's nothing in the base reasoning for their actions that allows them to do this. So if we're going to vote on it, we have to vote now, and this will now be standing precedent until decided in any form of governing documents. Will you, the rest of the members of the assembly, allow the chair to pick an executive cabinet member over you in speaking order for no other reason? It's happened twice.
We vote. I agree. Let's
It's
vote. I'm so
unfair.
confused what your motion is. Wait.
It's a point of order that the chair has decided to put up to the body.
Recognize point of personal privilege.
Just for terminology purposes, you're referring to the executive board and
Executive
not the
board.
executive cabinet.
Executive board.
Okay. Put this up to a vote. I would really like to find the section of Robert's Rules that explains, but okay. All those, it's like the affirm. Wait, can you clarify if we vote in favor, are we voting in?
That's what I'm trying to
Okay,
figure out.
thank you.
Favor of my point of order. I think that should be how it's done because I raised it. My point of order being that executive
Yeah, that information
committee,
should be known.
council, cabinet, whatever they're called, members do not have speaking privilege, speaking precedent privileges. All members under debate have the equal and same privileges, meaning that there must be an impartial, unbiased order in which people are chosen to speak.
So if we are in favor, then which way?
Okay. So if you vote in the affirmative, that means that you agree with the point of order, which is a disagreement with the chair's procedure, basically. And you, if you vote in the affirmative, you believe that there should be no preference given to members of the executive board in speaking order, all things being equal of members who are have raised their placard to speak. And voting in the negative means that you are, I guess, all right with the existing precedent of All things being equal, so assuming members have spoken for the same number of times, there is no recency between two of them, et cetera, that the person who is on the executive board and receives the chair's recognition first, that that is like acceptable procedure. That makes sense to people.
So
Privilege.
affirmative is with Admir and not affirmative is with Zora?
Yeah, so
Okay,
yes. All non-voting and voting members of the assembly have the same debating privileges per the governing documents. That is why I brought this up three times.
point of order. Is this debatable?
Yes, it's No.
It is not debatable per Robert's rules. Section 23, colon 2, colon 5.
Okay. It is 6:30, so I am not going to amend to make this debatable at all. I instead, first of all, motion to extend the meeting time to 6:45, by unanimous consent. There's a second. Is there dissent? Please do not. All right. Can you rescind that, please? Is there dissent? Okay, seeing none, meantime has extended to 6:45. All right, we'll now go into voting on this point of order. All those in the affirmative, so all those on ad in Admir's camp, just to put it easy. All
You know
right,
why it's funny?
all those in the affirmative, please raise your placards.
Legitimately.
It's funny because this has taken way too long.
Okay, all right. All those in the affirmative, please raise your placards.
Don't know why you're just giving the rights to the executive, the cabinet, whatever they call themselves, to speak over you. That's not venturing.
All right, all those. Wait, raise your placards again. I feel like I missed people.
All those against?
Guys, if you vote yes, we're getting rid of
No,
executive
raise your
privilege.
placards again.
There is no executive
If,
privilege to begin
okay,
with.
Admir, I asked for votes in the affirmative to raise their placards again because I'm not sure I took an accurate vote. So please, if you are in the affirmative, raise your placards right now.
Affirmative.
Okay, all those in the negative. Right there. Great. Voter Paul sings, I will, there's no possibility to abstain on this. Then, great. I will only recognize recency bias. Great. All right, moving on. I don't even know where we are on the agenda.
I think we're still
With
at 51.
No, 51 was. 52 expanding college credit limits.
Vote. I don't think we voted on 51.
Yes, we did. That's why I'm chair. Again, that was my resolution.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the next. Yeah. My bad. I thought we had
Oh, why did I
All right, I want to like move ahead here. This is crazy. I think this is pretty uncontroversial, but I'll just give a little backstory. I'm an ILRE, and ILR has an 18 credit limit, and that's really annoying. I won't make the motion to close debate. Okay, I won't make the motion to close debate right now because I know Christian has an amendment. So could everyone please let Christian make his amendment, and then hopefully we can close debate. Thanks.
All right, Representative Trolla.
Yeah, just a really brief thing. I noticed that it's, I mean, it might be true that it is no published limit on the credits that Nolan students can take. I don't know if that's actually true, but to my knowledge, as the Nolan representative, we are allowed to take 18 credits and can petition the registrar for 21, depending on our academic standing. But yeah, but beyond 21 is like absolutely off limits.
Can I just does your college, did I also get it wrong for your college? Y'all's colleges need to do a better job posting stuff on the internet. Okay, maybe I need to do a better job. But yeah, so look, can I just edit this for next week and get the proper?
Yes, that is the purpose
Okay.
of second to third reading.
Perfect.
Great.
I move to close debate and I'll talk to you
Is
guys.
there a second to closing debate? Is there dissent to closing debate? Okay, seeing none, this resolution has passed the third reading calendar. Debate is closed. Moving on to Resolution 55, condemning the university administration's use of programming to platform individuals implicated in war crimes.
Okay. So I want to make a few things very clear before we start getting into debate on this, because I already know a few things that are probably going to come up as concerns. Okay. For one, this is not trying to limit free speech. This is not trying to limit, like a diversity of academic thought in the slightest. This is not about certain viewpoints not being allowed on campus. It's not about certain kinds of people not being allowed on campus. That's not what this is saying at all. This is specifically talking about people who have been invited by administration on campus to give speech, to give talks or lectures, who have been directly implicated in war crimes by a human rights organization or by an international criminal court. Or who have had some kind of warrant out for their arrest by a national body, or by a human rights court, and have been like persecuted for war crimes. Like, this is very specific. And then secondly, I want to make it very clear that this is about admin bringing these kinds of people on campus. It's not about students. Student orgs can bring whoever they want, whether I have my own feelings about it or not, whether any of us do, but student orgs, like that is not what this is about. This is specifically about the administration, because the administration is a lot of our, like that represents a lot of our reputation, and then also is that sets a very strong precedent of like, these are adults, these are your administration saying like, these are the kind of people that you guys should be listening to. And I think as Brooks representative, I especially have a responsibility to make sure that the kinds of politicians and the kinds of, I'll just use politicians as the word, just the kinds of politicians and just people in general that are being put on a pedestal as, as successful in their fields, is, showing a good example to Brooks students of just doing things by like in procedure, just doing things by the law. That's literally it. So yeah, any questions? I know you guys are probably gonna have a lot, so please feel free.
As a very quick procedural note, this is stated as a type of action of legislation. However, it's a condemnation, which would normally be a sense of the body. So,
Okay.
Either correct it to sense of the body or change the be therefore resolved to be more have a legislative reference.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Bloom, I think I saw first.
That's my
Yeah.
Sorry. If I could allot my speaking time to Representative Chaudhary, I probably
Okay.
pass out. My bad,
Lydia,
Isha.
Lydia, you're the goat. Thank you. I'm here in the corner. I know it's hard. I think that the fundamental like sentiment behind this resolution is really good. I have two minor tweaks that I think I would like you to consider between second and third reading calendar. The first one is I don't think that we should set the precedent of having student groups on campus sponsor legislation. Just because what do you call it? A, I don't think I'm not sure if that's allowed. I'm not really positive about that, but it does imply a certain political rhetoric or tone. Behind the resolution that otherwise what you're claiming to be is just like more of an impartial like hey we shouldn't have like war criminals here on campus, which I think everyone can get behind. Number two, I would recommend you to do a little bit more digging inside because I'm sure this list is a lot more expansive than just Dick Cheney and I don't know how to say the former Israeli foreign minister's name as well. But I think that showing like admin that like hey like bring these speakers onto campus like when they are causing distress like isn't a good thing like necessarily for the student body, and that's a very, very valid concern to bring up. But I'd just be very careful to make sure you're not like making it slant towards one political direction or another. Just more generally as a student body, like hey, like we should bring speakers who bring like inclusionary like viewpoints, not exclusionary viewpoints.
I'll let we're low on time, so I won't respond. Thank you.
Representative Galperin.
Thank you for those clarifying points you made. It's really helpful. Here's the one kind of, I do still have concerns about the free speech. And kind of to Ishan's point, I almost wonder if we would be better off maybe saying what types of speakers we would favor as opposed to saying not to do a certain type. Yeah, and feel free to respond to everything I say, obviously. But what I would, if this is a place to discuss global conflicts, we do have events to discuss global conflicts, and I hate this fact as much as you do. Any discussion around solving or ending global conflicts almost always involves people who have committed war crimes. So I'm honestly not sure how much we can have those discussions if this passes. I am obviously not endorsing anything that war criminals say. I'm just putting it out there that I'm not sure we'll be able to have these conversations in that case.
Okay, I will respond to this. I do think putting what kinds of speakers we would want instead, in that kind of, I do think that gets very finicky. I do think that opens a door for whether it's me writing it or anyone writing it to put their own political views into it, and that's not what I'm trying to do here. And on the second point, I'm so sorry. I lost my train of thought. So somebody, I can bring it. Sorry, it was about, yeah, I do think that's kind of a pessimistic worldview. I think there are definitely people we could bring in that haven't been convicted of war crimes that can talk about things. Like, we can bring in legal scholars instead to talk about global conflict if, that's, the kind of thing we're talking about. Like, we can bring a legal scholar instead of, the actual politician who sent out the mission to, kill a bunch of little babies. Like, I don't think that just, kind of, cowering to like, oh, like, well, everybody's a war criminal, so we just have to let this happen. Like, I don't agree with that.
Okay, Representative Ehrlich.
I think this resolution is a good thing. I don't think that the administration, who spends, by the way, our tuition dollars on bringing the people that they bring to campus, right, should be spending our tuition dollars to bring war criminals to campus. And I'm like Representative Massoud said, I'm su supportive of student groups bringing whoever they want. I think that's part of free speech, but our administration should not be spending our dollars on that. Well,
sorry,
I move to extend the meeting time to 7:30.
there a second?
Second.
Is there dissent?
Dissent.
Yeah, there dissents. Will that take a vote on the motion to extend to 7:30? All those in favor of the motion to extend the meeting time to 7:30 p.m.
What time does it end? Vote failed.
6:45.
You can move to amend it, but all right. Okay, all right. All those in favor,
point of paper.
yes, yeah,
So
unanimous.
if we extend to 7:45, does it count as
Seven,
early?
7:30, seven.
7:30. Does it count as leaving early if you leave before then?
No, anything after 6:30 does not count as leaving early unless there was prior notification that our meeting would extend. Okay, all those in favor of extending to 7:30 p.m. Eighteen. All those opposed. So far, so hard. It? All right, three. All those abstaining. All right, and vote 18, three. Meantime, it's extended to 7:30. We can resume debate. You're finished with your point, and then you made the motion to extend. Did you respond to his point or no?
I don't need to.
Okay.
It's yeah. I agree with Max, who agrees with me. Yeah.
Representative Spector.
Yeah, so I just had some questions about you say human rights groups, but you don't specify any specific ones. And oh, sorry. Just I know that different groups have different opinions, and there's no standard for what constitutes an international rights groups. I wanted to know, would you consider changing it to maybe one specific group, so that way there's like a standard set? Because I mean, I feel like anybody could just make their own international group that's not necessarily all that credible. If that makes sense.
Okay. So the issue with that is that there are so many international courts that it's really hard to do. Like I could say, only the ICC, but like Tipsy Livni, for instance, several of the courts that had put out for her arrest. Let's see. So for human rights groups, it was Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. And then in terms of like actual courts, it was Westminster Magistrates Court and the Crown Protection Services. As well as the. Okay, I can't see it in my notes, so I'm not going to say it because I don't want to accidentally spread misinformation because my memory is giving
Are
me the
these
wrong
all the
ideas.
UN organizations?
These are all in the UK. They are not. The Westminster Magistrates Court is not a.
Wait, why are we picking the UK? Sorry.
Why are we what?
Okay, yeah. Please move back and
This
forth
is
and the
this
side
about
conversation. I'm trying to count for quorum.
this is yeah, it's just a UK court. Like this is just about these are just about courts in general putting out for and it's always on the basis of like there are guidelines of like what a war crime is. So like whatever court is putting it out, they're still referencing things that the ICC or that the UN has outlined as like that the Geneva Convention has outlined as what a war crime is. So like I don't think putting one specific group would be good for this. I think that doesn't get at the whole issue in its entirety. And I also don't think that it's necessarily right because all of those standards are being followed across courts. Across the entire global sphere, excuse me.
Okay, Representative Carson.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point. I feel like there's no point in limiting, and these are all like credible or like bodies, or governing bodies. The only thing is, I you mentioned like because like I'm reading the clause, and it doesn't necessarily say like. It says that to like adopt transparent enforceable standards for speaker selection, but like it doesn't say like what you were kind of hinting at, like mentioning where like if it specific if the speaker specifically listed as a war criminal by one of these organizations that they shouldn't attend. So I just wasn't sure if our is our goal for this to make the actual guidelines and say like if they've committed war crimes or human rights violations and they shouldn't be allowed to attend or for a kind of just telling the administration like you should just like make clearer standards. I don't know. It just seems unclear to me whether which we're
Okay.
going with.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think that's something I can work on between second and third reading for sure. Like also this idea of legislation versus sense of the body, I'm gonna have to work on, so I'll just put that into the idea. I would prefer this to be legislation, honestly. And then maybe we can and you guys can tell me them right now if there are any specific guidelines that you have in mind that you want me to add. But I do think I can add toward to the end of the resolution, like what exactly I think this like ethical practice of selecting speakers would look like, and what the transparency would also look like. If that's me writing that like I want the university to create guidelines, then that's one thing. But I could also write like out an idea of guidelines and put that in. You guys can let me know what you think of both ideas.
A quick note, legislation needs to cite where we have authority over whatever process based on the charter. A resolution is something that's a command. We don't necessarily have designated or specified authority in the charter. And then a sense of the body is an opinion of the body. So I believe Representative Ehrlich has passed a piece of legislation. And so he would be someone to talk to about finding a point in the charter if you'd like to
Okay.
attach it for legislation, otherwise, resolution.
Resolution. Okay. I think it'd probably okay. Probably end up being a resolution.
Vice President Young.
I smile favorably upon passing this resolution. I want to quickly respond to a point that Representative Gapper made with the comment that when we're bringing in speakers that have something to do with a global conflict, that it's very likely that they would be a war criminal. And that is factually untrue because to be a war criminal, like that's a very serious crime with a very high like legal precedent, and it like requires a very high burden of proof. And like with a quick search over all of the international courts, like the rate of conviction for war criminals is less than 30%. So it's very much possible for us to have conversations about like global conflict without having war criminals. It doesn't limit the conversation at all. And I feel like it's very important for us to set a standard and a precedent at this school that somebody who meets the criteria and the burden of proof to be considered a war criminal should not be invited on this campus. Like, if you guys take a quick look at some of the requirements it takes to be a war criminal, somebody like that shouldn't be invited on campus, irregardless of philosophical point of views. But yeah.
Representative Walters.
I just have a question about like the standard that you're setting for the war criminals that shouldn't be brought to campus. Are these people who have had like formal charges brought against them by an international criminal court? I know that we
Formal charges, yes. Not necessarily a conviction, but like because and in my research, it's very clear all these like all those convictions have been blocked by. We know how corrupt the government is, right? Okay, I don't need to go into that. But it's yeah, it's charges.
Okay.
Representative Dorn.
I also just wanted to circle back to like the standards that it takes to be a like war criminal or even, suggested to be a war criminal. Like that's not something that was standardized by the UN. That existed long before the UN was even formed and started with the Geneva Convention and even discussions prior to that, which was in the 1800s initially, and then was constituted after World War II, after, war crimes obviously occurred. And so I just want to mention that it's also something that almost every single nation in the world has in some way, shape, or form signed onto in one of the treaties. So it's like it's not really a biased opinion. It's international law, and it's what we set standards for our entire human system for.
Okay, Representative Causey.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, unlike student organizations that can basically do whatever they want, I feel like the point of our actual governing body inviting people on campus is meant to unite students together. And it does, at least to me, it doesn't matter how you actually feel about these war criminals coming on campus. If their coming on campus isn't actually uniting students, right? And is doing more so like causing chaos, and we're able to have a discussion here where most of us don't want them here, then I don't think that we should be spending like campus money on them coming here in the first place. And that's just like point blank, simply because of how much chaos and like negative discourse they cause, more so than whether or not you actually believe in their right to speak.
Point of inquiry.
Recognized.
How many more people till we lose quorum?
Let me count. I have 23 people here, so we've still got 6 people. All right. I don't know who I'd call those. Representative Bloom.
I motion to close debate.
There's second on closing debate.
Second.
Is there dissent on closing debate? There's dissent. So we'll now go into voting on closing debate. All those in favor of closing debate, please raise your placards and keep them raised just so. There's 20. All those opposed. Closing debate. All those abstaining. All right, and vote 22. Debate is now closed. Resolution has passed to the third reading calendar. And vote 22. Debate is closed. Resolution has passed to the third reading calendar. We will now move to.
Residential housing.
Okay, very quickly, I think that all students deserve clear and accessible information when making housing decisions, and especially for disabled students when that information is so critical to their health and safety. Secondly, they can't make those decisions without having like information or like marketing like for those resources. And third, I think that housing and residential life should be working with SDS in order to be able to close that accessibility gap that disabled students are facing.
Representative Galperin.
I think this is a great resolution. Also from our perspective, I think just scratches the surface of the problems that housing and the housing office and the people who work in it have caused. So I'm glad we're starting to hold some accountability to hold them accountable to that. The one thing I would say is I wonder if in this spirit, there's more we can be doing, say for incoming students or even for returning students, to tell them, this is how you get in contact with SDS. This is how you request an accommodation. This is the type of documentation you might have to provide. Because I do think the resources to get accessible housing are there. It's just we don't really, I think most people don't know about it. Like, I had to get accessible housing as well, and I had no idea how to go about it at the beginning. So I'm very glad to move forward with this.
EVP for Noah.
I think this resolution is great. I think it is important, and as well as like with the testimonies we heard at the beginning, I think it's almost essential that we pass this. So I motion to close debate.
Was there a dissent to closing debate? Seeing none, debate is now closed. This resolution is passed to the third reading calendar. We'll now move to resolution 57, ensuring equitable evaluation of special projects funding requests.
This mic actually works. Okay. So resolution 57, ensuring equitable evaluation of special project funding requests. Essentially, given resolution we passed last week, we wanted to make sure, and this is like kind of a topic of conversation, but specifically with organizations that are like of minority and marginalized communities, making sure that their ability to actually receive like funding via the special projects fund doesn't end up being hindered via reasons that are affecting like a larger issue or a larger group, that larger issue is like pre-professional organizations, which seems to be kind of the main area that people are looking at. So that's kind of like the main premise of this resolution. Kennedy, and I'll let her speak on this, or VP Young, has like specific data that kind of looks at special projects funds from 2016 up until now. I think that's really 2014 up until now, apologies. That's really important, but my main thing is just like, I think there's just kind of been it's been increasingly difficult over like kind of the past 2 years or so for like minority and marginalized organizations to get special projects funds, whether that's through discussions on the assembly or just kind of in general. And while yes, we've passed them, it has been increasingly hard and difficult for them to actually get passed. So this is kind of just addressing that issue.
Yeah, I'll speak quickly to the stats, but I won't go too in-depth because, I mean, you guys have the numbers in front of you. But basically, multiple conversations we had about special projects funding, even during public comment today, there are comments that we're funding small trips for, you know, people to go hang out with friends, that we're funding financial clubs. But statistically, since 2014, it's just not true. 65% of all funding organizations have been open. Of that 35% with closed membership, 63% of that 35% goes towards organizations that serve historically in marginalized minority groups. So when you take a look at the numbers, it's really 13% of special project funding decisions are to organizations that both maintain closed membership and do not serve marginalized groups or minority populations. So I feel like when we're talking about special projects funding, we keep having these groups of people who are trying to go with their friends or finance clubs, we keep having those people in mind and not the people who are the majority benefactors of our special projects funding, which is like organizations that serve historically marginalized and minority groups. So this resolution just calls that make sure that when we're having conversations about like special projects funding, that the group that is the minority, that is the majority benefactor of special projects funding, is spoken about equitably and has equitable protections.
I'll say one thing, and it's mostly a signaling thing to like Hayden. How's it going? Basically, like if you look at the clause that says no rules passed by this assembly shall be construed to prohibit or discourage the approval or disbursement of funds to organizations that have a recruitment process for the purposes of serving the mission of supporting marginalized or minority groups, that if we were to pass this, the assembly's interpretation of that will be what is written there. So I guess my point is, if we pass this, we're sort of reinterpreting something. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with all the statements made. I think the reason why I love this resolution out of many is because it opens a conversation to what I believe should be an ongoing conversation of how we properly should use special project funding. Another reason why I love this resolution and why I think it's an important one is because the discussion on special project has been raised as a philosophical one, as, oh, one person thinks that finance should be used like this, another one thinks it should be used like another thing. But I think the resolution frames it as what it is, which is an equity issue, and why I think we should vote on it.
So we're happy to hear any comments or questions as well. And I'm always open as well to talking about special projects.
Representative Hahn.
I agree with you guys. I think you guys bring up a very good point. I do like this, but I guess my sort of question is, how does this impact the other resolution we voted for last week? Does this contradict essentially what we were saying last time?
It doesn't contradict it. It's just sort of, you know, this is an idea I kind of cooked up about interpreting something that we've already passed, because we aren't changing the bylaws, but like we're stating the assembly's interpretation. You catching what I'm saying? All right. So I'm just saying, like, that's a good way to, like, maybe, like, all sort of agree on how we interpret the bylaws and also make sure that we're protecting the groups that should be protected on campus, you know, from potential discrimination. So, yeah.
Yeah, there are no proposed amendments to standing rules, so nothing is edited. Representative Porter.
Yeah, so I just have a general question, because I have actually no idea about this. Do we know how selective these clubs are in general? Because for me, it's kind of the concern that we're limiting the amount of people who can even get into these clubs, so they have less resource access themselves.
We have a general perception of how selective the organizations are based off the organizations that we're involved in and discussed with and spoken to. We were unable to get closed membership organizations that serve marginalized minority groups to come here today due to prelims and events, but like they will be able to speak next week before the third reading calendar. But generally speaking, those organizations are not as exclusive as like portrayed, and exclusivity is not based off of merit. So it's not like who has the best resume, but more so like who needs the resources the most, because marginalized pre-professional organizations, have you seen like through the previous like special projects funding, like they want to give opportunities to marginalized groups that have not had the opportunity to do things that they have like that they have not done before. So majority of the interview process is based off of gauging who needs and who does not. So even the application process is not based off of merit, but need per se.
And I also want to note that like this is, we're highlighting marginalized and minority-based organizations, but this is about being equitable. And so this is involving all organizations in a way, but we're just giving the specific highlight for these organizations because of the historical implication as well.
Vice President Watkins.
So I know the one we talked about a lot last week was Black Ivy, and I know like Daniel and Kennedy, you guys remember, so that's like one you're familiar with. But I also know like I've had some friends who necessarily like haven't gotten to that organization, but they'd also would have really appreciated the opportunities to be able to go on that DC trip that you guys recently went on. And this isn't like trying to like, this is just kind of trying to like think of a solution and to see if this is the right solution. Why Do you really feel strongly about like, more like selective groups being able to be the ones that are like organizing those trips rather than maybe those groups partnering with another group that serves a similar demographic, but making the trip more open so that way that it's like, as I see it, like more equitable and more students would be able to go on it while still serving groups that maybe are underrepresented in fields like law is like the one I've been thinking about.
Well, and then I'll pass it off to those other comments. But on one part, there is precedent for the assembly. Like, I mean, if you're using Black Ivy as an example, and even if you use like BSU, which is also an open membership, but they also go on a DC trip, we have funded this. We've funded those types of trips before. And like Kennedy or VP Young has said and shown with the data, like there is historical precedent of us being able to fund those organizations. So it's not necessarily like we're taking away an opportunity for another organization or for someone else that is like not within a club necessarily, but it's just ensuring that the clubs that have been made and the organizations that have been made for these marginalized groups, along with other organizations, ensuring an equitable like revision of them whenever we're determining special projects funds.
And then even to the cross collaboration point, like if I do a collaboration with another org, that also limits the amount of money that they are able to receive in special projects funding as well. So if we're asking for orgs to collaborate with other orgs that have similar missions or serve the same like group of people, that's also limiting them as well. Because even when you look at like orgs that have similar missions or serve similar demographics, they all request money from us. And then even like to Black Ivy's point, even to the point about Black Ivy in the DC trip, like Black Ivy is limited because we cannot take everybody on the DC trip. But the thing about it is, like, if you can get away to DC, you have access to everything on that itinerary. It's just like they cannot personally pay for everybody to go to DC. Like this February, like I did not travel to DC with Black Ivy. I traveled to DC with another organization, but I had access to the itinerary as well. But they cannot afford to take everybody. Like, but it's not that, it's like closed access. Like if you're in DC, you have access to all the itineraries, all the schools, all of the events, all of the law firms that they visit. Like you have access to it.
Point of inquiry, can I just know the number we get to where we just form?
17.
How many are we?
Me too. Okay, Representative Masood.
I think this resolution is great, and to what was just brought up, I think like the fact that like these organizations are more selective is like an inherent nature of like what they represent. Like Black Ivy, for instance, like that's it's a group for like it's for Black pre-law students, and like we know that like there's a disproportionate amount of Black people in the field of law, and like they have a selective organization because law is selective, like and they still make it their mission to constantly make it as equitable as possible, have BSU like have that access to the itinerary. And it's a group that serves like a group of pre-law students that are underrepresented in the field that they want to see themselves in. So I don't think that like that's like I don't think this debate that we've been having the past 2 weeks about like closed versus an open membership and stuff, like when it comes to these kinds of groups, I think it's very clear as to like why they operate the way they do, and it's necessary for like the special project funds exist so that they have the same opportunities that any other pre-law student would have.
Representative Galbraith.
This might come off as a bit of a gotcha, but like I promise it's not. I do worry about ambiguity. So my question here is, say an organization approaches that is not, I don't know, specifically oriented for a historically marginalized group, but happens to be that happens that its membership is mostly of historically marginalized groups. So in that case, if we pass this, how would you say we'd approach something like that? You can just respond.
So, I mean, there's a couple things, right? I mean, there's some ambiguity. There's some ambiguity in the current rule as well. And it's open to interpretation to an extent. But I will note that it says, what it actually says is
organizations that have a recruitment process strictly for the purposes of serving the mission of supporting marginalized or minority groups. So that there's the word strictly in there. I think that kind of clarifies the answer to your question, to be honest. I actually don't even think there's ambiguity. So really, it's a matter of, is the point of the recruitment process to support their continued ability to support marginalized groups? Is that, do we agree with that? Okay, I just want to make sure I'm not misrepresenting how people here think of the resolution. I'm going to move to close debate.
There a second to the motion to close debate? Okay, there a second. Is there dissent? Seeing none, this resolution has passed to the third reading calendar. We'll now move to Resolution 58, Winter Sidewalk Maintenance. Actually gonna cede the chair because I have a statement. Cede the chair. I have a note on.
Like, you have like point of information, or you have like point of information, or.
Can I motion to end debate on this resolution?
No. No, because they haven't formally presented the resolution, and we're not even in debate of it yet.
I mean, I had a bunch of things that I wanted to say about this just because this is so important to me. So as you guys know, I am disabled. I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And for me, what that means is that my joints don't work like they're supposed to. And these past few weeks, I mean, I'm a senior, so this is even in comparison to previous years that I have been on campus. These past few weeks have been really, really difficult for me, especially when we had that big snowstorm in January. Not all of us have, you know, Jeep Wranglers like Walker White to get to class. sorry, I'm a little nervous. This is like my first time I'm really presenting. I've been having some trouble just both with like snow not being removed from the pathways, especially after that snowstorm. Like literally like in the afternoon, I saw snowplows going on the sidewalks and I'm like, well, this is great. I've already had to go to like five classes today. That would have been helpful a few hours ago. And then when the snow melts and inevitably becomes that really awful slush, that itself is really slippery and really dangerous for someone like me. And then when it refreezes, then that becomes even more slippery. And I've fallen down quite a few times. And it's really scary because if you guys remember in the fall, I fell down really bad and there wasn't even ice yet. And I've been talking to a lot of other disabled students on this campus, some who use wheelchairs. And I mean, the ice can make it super slippery to get around in general, but also to get up a ramp. And I also was talking to another student who's blind, and she was saying that there's a whole bunch of pathways on campus that say no winter maintenance. But if you're blind, you can't read it. So she will get there. She'll have her guide dog guide her to the pathway, thinks that's all fine until suddenly she hits a big block of ice and it's been really, really dangerous for her. And it's just been really, really, really hard for a lot of people on this campus. And so this is something that was really said to us a lot in tabling as well. We had quite a few. I mean, a couple people on the assembly even came to me to say that you guys had fallen down and gotten hurt. And that's just unacceptable on this campus, especially because we know this is upstate New York. There's no reason for that. We have the tools. And if the streets can be cleared, then the sidewalks should be. Most of our students are walking around, and if they're not, they're trying to take these buses. And you have to still walk to the bus station. It's just completely unacceptable. So The other big important thing that people brought up to me was, you know, on the Thurston Avenue Bridge, there's these black metal things that I think it's like a rite of passage for students. They like come back so defeated from a prelim, and they're just like, oh man, I like want to test the safety nets. Yeah, what?
Metal strip of death.
Metal strip of death. They're like, I'm gonna test the safety net. And then the metal bar decides for them that they're going to test the safety net. Like, I can tell you, my freshman year, I literally slipped on it, slammed into the green railing, and like, I swear, I just like saw my whole life flash in front of my eyes. Like, I thought I was gonna die there. And I joke, but there was a student who recently fell there and broke. I don't even know what they broke, but had to get an ambulance to come get them because they couldn't get back up. And it's completely unacceptable. It's the metal bar of death. I think everyone's laughing because everyone's fallen on that stupid thing. So there really should be some sort of like rubber thing gets put on there. Do you have anything else? I'm not.
President Durham.
Two notes. One, I still remember the first time I slipped on that metal thing. And it's like when they like say to let your toddler like touch like a hot stove or something so they never touch it again. It's exactly how I feel every time I walk over that bridge. That aside, when it comes to salt, so like an environmental note, because Libby's not here, road salt is harmful for the environment. It's incredibly hard on the environment and natural resources like grass. Like you'll usually see when the snow melts that they're always replacing the grass on the side of like every path around campus. And also it's pretty limited actually, if you like really look into it. Road salt might be a resource that we run out of. So I do recommend adding in kind of a provision about sand, which is a good alternative for lesser used paths or for kind of supplementary maintenance around like other than salting paths. Additionally, considering many students do live farther from campus in areas that are poorly maintained by the city of Ithaca, who like they don't plow for hours and hours and hours, those types of things, it definitely shouldn't be the burden of the students to have a campus that's unmaintained. So I just wanted to add that note though about sand.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, the point about the like it being like a toddler not touching the stove. I would say that even people who have slipped and fallen on it, like that did not stop me. Slamming into that metal bridge did not stop me from like doing it over and over and over again. And like, I think that's just an unacceptable thing for visitors who come to campus, who's like, imagine if your grandma came to visit you on campus and fell. Like, that's awful. It's terrible. About the sand, I didn't know that salt was bad for the environment. Did you?
Quick note, with Representative Sekic leaving, we will be below.
Are we going to be below?
Never mind. Continue.
Wait, what are we at?
We're good.
Okay.
Continue.
Oh wait, I lost my train of thought. Oh yeah, the sand. That's a really good idea. I hadn't thought of it. So I would like to motion to amend the I would like to motion to amend to insert between lines 21 and 22 to say, be it further resolved, the student assembly recommends that sand be considered as an alternative to salt as an eco-friendly way to control the ice on campus.
Second.
Repeat the last part. Eco-friendly way to.
Resolve the problems with ice on this campus.
Is there any dissent?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I sponsored that resolution too, so.
Seeing none, that amendment has been made. Representative Alpern.
I remember a couple of years ago there was a CU News thing that said Cornell spends more money on no winter maintenance signs than on winter maintenance, and I think this very much encapsulates that. That said, I think this is really timely, and we ought to get it done before the winter's out. So, I'd actually motion to suspend the rules and move this to the third reading calendar.
Can I respond to
Can you
that?
repeat? Can you repeat your?
Can't anyone move to suspend but exec votes?
No.
I would like, can I respond though? I would
Yes.
just like to say, like, if one of somebody on the executive board could, that would be awesome because I know that this Sunday it's supposed to be like 50 and everything is going to melt, and then Monday it's going to be frozen again. So there is like a 90% chance you see me in like crutches and like a million bandages next Thursday because I'm probably gonna fall on the stupid ice. And so if we can move it to third reading calendar so that maybe there's a chance that something more will be done by then, that would be awesome. Like really, really awesome.
Representative Ehrlich.
I struggle with this. I don't want to say it, but I'm just going to say that I do think that people are purposefully talking for way too long. And you can guess why I think that is. I move to close debate.
Okay.
Is there
This is really important to me.
a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent?
Dissent. Hayden had something.
Seeing dissent, we're going to vote on the motion to close debate. All those in favor of closing debate, please raise your placard.
Oh, wait, close.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Debate has been closed, and this has been moved to third reading calendar for next week. I see Chair Barr.
Moving on to resolution 59, readily available hot allergy safe meals, which is Ellie and Ezra.
Starting with it.
Yeah, so
We have 19.
I thought 17 is okay.
All right, you, they're speaking out of turn. Please introduce your resolution.
Yeah, of course. So I believe this is pretty straightforward as it stands. I have someone close to me that has celiac disease, so he can't eat anything really that's readily served in the dining halls. And he'll have to wait like 10 to 15 minutes for gluten-free pasta or gluten-free pizza. And it just makes it really hard to like eat at any of the dining halls, especially with the time constraints that Cornell imposes on us. And as it stands, in dining halls such as Morrison, they have like gluten-free stations. I just don't understand why there isn't like hot food readily available at them by means of like a hot plate or just some sort of I don't know, device such as that. So this resolution is in favor of installing something like that at Morrison and other dining halls so that people with gluten allergies or other allergies can eat.
All that as someone with heavy dietary restrictions, I obviously really sympathize. In a moment, I am going to move to refer this to the Dining Services Committee. I just wanted to check if anyone has any questions about it before we do so.
Representative Ehrlich.
It's annoying for me to do so, but I want to make sure it happens quickly, so I move to refer this to the Dining Services Committee.
There a second on that motion?
Second.
Is there dissent on that motion? See
Does not go through consensus.
Not yet. We refer it to the committee.
There. Okay. Is there dissent on the motion to refer to Dining Services Committee? Okay. Seeing none, this resolution has been referred to the Dining Services Committee. We'll now move to Resolution 60, free laundry. I'm actually gonna cede the chair for this too.
Wow, this is really fun. So coming into freshman, sorry, coming in as freshman student rep, one of the things I made sure to do was survey a huge part of our population, like freshman population. An issue that consistently comes up is the fact that things like laundry costs weren't on our initial cost of attendance fees, right? And time and time again, students consistently say that they would much rather pay for laundry up front because they know that they're paying for laundry than come to Cornell not knowing they're paying for laundry and now have a bill sprung upon them. So I'm moving to one, go to other like housing committees and like have the permission of the student assembly to go to housing committees and push to have our laundry cost put on our initial housing cost instead of having to pay for it during the semester.
Representative Anand.
Yeah, so I would like to I disagree with this, and I disagree because I think that
It would be unfair to move all the costs to fund the laundry, especially since we outsource it onto our tuition bill, because people have different laundry needs and people are doing it at different rates than other people. And I also think that in terms of like free laundry as a whole, it doesn't make sense. Nothing's free. We're gonna be paying for it one way or another. I would rather just be more specific and work on like communication with students, maybe in a pre-orientation, one of our pre-orientation Tacton Center workshops, talking to us about this is the laundry fee, this is what it costs, or have a system where you can pay BRBs for your laundry, or you can have like, I don't know, potentially an option where you can have like an infinite laundry sort of card, and then you pay for that at the beginning of the semester or something like that. But I think making it free as a whole doesn't work because, well, nothing's free. We're paying for it in some way or another.
Yeah, free is like just a term of speak for the title here. But to start off with, the reason why it has to get paid for upfront and it can't be just like, oh, yeah, depends on who uses it, is the same reason why like freshmen at Cornell have to come in with unlimited dining plans, right? You don't just get to say some people eat at dining halls more than other people do, so we shouldn't all come in with some sort of dining plan. The thing is, we are, at the way it currently sets, we have people from lower income communities coming in and now having this cost sprung on them that they didn't originally know exist, right? While I'd be all for having some form of laundry plan, and that's part of what I've already spoken to, I apologize, I've Keaton about when we go to the housing committee, because that's what would have to happen, is I would have to go with Keaton and go to the housing committee to create a formal plan. While I'm all for having a form of like an actual swipe, right now it's just the fact that they should be something paid for up front and not person by person. And that's something that, as freshman rep, everyone is saying, like across the students at Cornell, right? It's not just something I'm springing up. So it's something that current students are quite disappointed by.
Representative Terrell.
I think this is an idea that's not necessarily new. Like, I'm sure that it's been brought up before, and there are many, many reasons I think why it hasn't happened yet. I mean, you bring up other colleges. I do want to mention that, like, at Dartmouth, for example, my brother went there, so I know of this. Their laundry became free because, like, some alum donated, like, $40 million, or I mean, some alum donated like a bunch of money, and suddenly like laundry became free. So like, it just kind of goes to that point where like, some the money's coming from somewhere, someone's paying for it. But I actually really like the idea that we could use BRBs or try to use BRBs. Like, I actually really think that's a much better idea or more feasible, because like, we're already kind of paying for it. I don't know, maybe that's like an avenue to look into instead. Sorry.
Yeah, to respond to your point, right? The reason why I bring up other colleges is other colleges, let's say Harvard, who's done this recently, and this is also reflected in my statement here, simply increased housing fees. And they were very upfront in their initial letter, like, oh, yeah, we increased it by blank amount. So that way we can now have quote unquote free laundry, but it's not free because you're paying for it upfront. And that's part of what I'm trying to do now here initially. Like, I understand everything has to be paid for. I'm not saying we're just gonna have free laundry out of nowhere, but that we should move to have these fees be upfront, where students know that they're paying for it in the first place, and that's reflected on their housing cost, right? Or reflected in their cost of attendance. And I apologize, I think our BRB system is a little different, and I'm all for, as I spoke to Keaton about earlier, as we go through housing, we'd likely have to have some form of like laundry swipe situation. But the end all be all is that laundry is something that's necessary for all students to survive on campus. And because it's something necessary for all students to survive on campus, it should be reflected in our cost of attendance because it does cost laundry to attend Cornell.
Vice President Attaboy.
Just want to say I really like this resolution. I hate paying for laundry all the time. I wanted to clarify about your plans with Keaton about talking to housing, just because I really like this resolution. I want it to pass, but I am a bit worried about feasibility. And I am more than willing to help you. Like, please reach out if you like have any questions. But I just want to know, like, who are you reaching out to? What are the plans? And I also recommend that if you are reaching out to someone between second and third, just to put that in there, just to make sure that Kolakoff like knows everything that's going on so it gets passed.
Quick note for yours, while we have 2 minutes left.
Okay. Yeah, on the topic of feasibility, because this is something I discussed, as everyone's saying, the money doesn't come out of nowhere. Keaton is, I believe, in charge of our board. Correct me if I'm wrong, Zora, what is she in charge of? Yeah, she's our student board of trustee member. So the reason why this has to pass through the student assembly first is that what we need to do is show that, oh, this is something that students agree with, and this is something that students want for it to be paid for upfront. That has been shown through surveys, and now it has to get reflected through the decisions of the student assembly, which is why I have to pass this here. And then I would take this with Keaton and actually go to the Board of Trustees and push to have a long-term solution that we can actually afford and actually enforce through the Board of Trustees and what their like solutions would be so students are paying for this upfront.
We have 1 minute. Chair would smile for everybody on a motion to adjourn. Just saying.
So moved.
You have to make the motion. Okay. Is there a second? Motion to adjourn. Listen to me. Okay, there's dissent. Seeing that we're going to vote on the motion to adjourn. All those in favor, please raise your placards.
We're adjourning in a minute.
Does this still?
All those in favor, raise your placards, please. All those opposed. Abstention. Okay.
Motion
It
to.
I failed. Go ahead.
Oh, motion to close debate.
Is there a second? Is there any dissent? We're gonna vote on the motion to close debate now. All those in favor of closing debate on the resolution, raise your placards. Please raise them high.
From here. Awesome.
All right, well, we don't have quorum and it's 7:30. So it's just it'll be normal.